You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 102. This minute begins with the pilot seat rising from underground and ends with Shaw being blasted by the air rushing through the tunnels from the Juggernaut. As I mentioned in the previous scene, the pilot's seat is a blend of CGI and practical. As it rises from the ground, it is CG, and then it becomes a practical prop. And I honestly cannot tell where the change happens. While the Furious Girls documentary doesn't make it explicitly clear, I doubt the opening floor mechanism or the rising chair that folds out and articulates was done practically. It's just far too complicated. As far as I can tell, the prop chair can swivel around on the spot, and that's all it was built to do. So somewhere in this sequence, it goes from a digital model to a physical one that the engineer can interact with, and the blending is seamless. The chair does look like a cannon or a turret, but it makes no sense for this to be a weapon inside of a ship. I mean, what are you going to fire at, your crewmates? By equal measure, it looks like a telescope, so just like the multi-generational warning signs, the form of something doesn't necessarily tell us its function, especially if it is as alien to us as this is. What we can say for certain is that it is a pilot's chair. This is how the Juggernaut is piloted. If we look at the end of the telescope, we see transparent orbs. These seem to suggest some kind of sensory array. I would guess this is how they navigate and detect the surrounding environment. As David strains to look up at the chair, white fluid continues to pour out of his mouth in steady pulses, meaning Fassbender just had to hold, I don't know, milk in his mouth and control the flow. Lovely. A little while back in Phil's Minutes, we discussed the mystery of anesthesia, and recently, that mystery was solved, so I quote SciTech Daily here. The discovery by chemist Richard Lerner and molecular biologist Scott Hansen settles a century-old scientific debate, one that still simmers to this day. Do anesthetics act directly on cell membrane gates called ion channels, or do they somehow act on the membrane to signal cell changes in a new and unexpected way? It has been nearly 5 years of experiments, calls, debates, and challenges to arrive at the conclusion that it is a two-step process that begins in the membrane, the duo says. The anesthetics perturb ordered lipid clusters within the cell membrane known as lipid rafts to initiate the signal. So, yeah, it's pretty a complicated process, and I don't follow it myself, but it's just nice to know that, oh, we finally do know how this works, and I do feel somewhat more comfortable should I ever need surgery. As the engineer prepares to set off, the chair lowers the armor onto him, and we briefly get a shot that mirrors Giga's initial concept art for the jockey. It's all come full circle. Would this have been a more powerful image if this was a more direct alien prequel? If the engineers had been the ones to create the xenomorph? I'm not so sure. I actually like how complicated the origins of the xenomorph have proven thus far. It's weird and experimental. I like that Prometheus gives us just enough information and it raises even more questions. In O'Bannon's script, the space jockey was initially only intended to be the victim of the xenomorph anyway. Just another random species roped into this horror. We cut to a shot of the exterior of the Juggernaut, and while it looks cool, the geography of everything in relation to each other isn't very clear. Shaw seems to react to this sight, but what is she actually looking at? Presumably the engineer is somewhere deep inside the ship, and Shaw has just run out of the ship. She's in the halls or a corridor somewhere. She shouldn't be able to see anything. I don't know if this hangar bay is even accessible or viewable from the angle we're seeing it shown from if you were to explore this place on foot. I think this place works a bit like an airport. You're never actually on the tarmac, you just... the door of the plane directly opens into the airport. I want to expand on what we touched upon in previous minutes. How does David know how the engineer language sounds if he has never heard it? I quote the straight dope here. Champollion, one of the translators of the Rosetta Stone, made two breakthroughs. The first was comparing the demotic characters signifying Ptolemy on the Rosetta Stone to those representing Cleopatra in a separate example of demotic. He found characters corresponding to the Greek equivalents of P, L, T, O, and E in each name. In other words, demotic characters didn't just symbolize concepts, they spelled out how words were pronounced. As you may have guessed, in Greek, the P in Ptolemy isn't silent. So that was surprising. Ptolemy does not sound right. Champollion's next brainstorm was more of a leap. First, he identified the hieroglyphs corresponding to various demotic characters. Then he took the hieroglyphs for Ptolemy, sounds wrong, doesn't it, on the Rosetta Stone, and compared them to those on an obelisk in a cartouche. That's a good word. Cartouche is a good word, yeah. In a cartouche known to signify Cleopatra. Sure enough, he found the P, L, O, and E hieroglyphs exactly where he predicted. What about the T? Champollion deduced he'd found a hieroglyph homophone for this letter. That is, another symbol having the same pronunciation as with our F and PHs. So, there's one way of doing it, but how does this compare to the engineer language? Is it phonetic or ideographic? Honestly, looking at the symbols, it could go either way. It could even be like Japanese, where we see examples of both. The hiragana represents the basic sounds, it's phonetic. And the katakana or kanji represent whole words, it's ideographic. Given that the engineer language is said to relate to Proto-Indo-European, perhaps this narrowed the possibilities down a bit. We are also dealing with an alien race that created us and appears similar to us as far as speech faculties are concerned. Again, to use the Arrival reference, those giant octopuses are so far removed from anything we can comprehend that communication was far more challenging. But engineers are more along the lines of a race of humans we just haven't encountered before. It would be like trying to communicate with Neanderthal. And yes, that's how that's actually pronounced. It's Neanderthal, not Neanderthal. It's German. But we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves here. What is actually canonically stated and shown in the film? Proto-Indo-European is never mentioned. We get no references of writing left behind by the engineers or even humans transcribing their words. We are just shown David learning languages and then he speaks to the engineer. So the film asks you to assume a lot, which is ironic given the amount of consideration that was put into the language in pre-production. There's a whole backstory and I've just come to take it for granted. But it isn't even in the film, so what conclusion am I meant to come to? This is an aspect of film analysis that becomes challenging. One should review the film on its own terms, of course. Any supplementary information is just that, supplementary, and shouldn't be essential to understanding and enjoying the film. However, this one is in a grey area. The film is running on all the assumptions I just told you about. What evidence is there in the film? It really comes down to the viewer recognizing the language David was learning in the beginning of the movie, and the one he speaks at the end. Even then, we are made to assume that they've got some evidence as to the language these beings speak. We have no idea how they came to the conclusion. We are shown artifacts from random points from across the planet, so that doesn't even point to a specific language either. It may have actually been simpler to just say, "This is David, he speaks all human languages, so if anyone can figure out how to communicate with these aliens, it's him, and that's it. He's an advanced AI that can just hear a language, and if it's similar, or similar elements to ones he knows, he can just adapt to it." That would have been way more efficient. So I think this is one detail that could have been simplified and clarified quite a bit. It's not a huge problem, it's just there's a discrepancy between what is shown and what was intended behind the scenes, although I think either way there's room for error, there's always the possibility that David still got it wrong. It makes me wonder, is it possible to have a written language that has no verbal equivalent? Humans primarily communicate through speech, and writing is a system of recording those words. We think in our spoken language, when we read we're hearing words in our head. Unless you're one of those rare people that lack an inner monologue. It's unlikely any species would communicate only in writing, and the only exception would be computers, binary code being a chief example. It is a form of language for a computer. It contains information and instructions, but it's not intended to be spoken, and it would be incredibly impractical to do so. It is a complicated string of code to convey a concept, or it can even represent individual letters. In this sense, it is both phonetic and ideographic. But it isn't something human beings could easily memorize or use. So if we encounter an alien AI at some point, we're in for a real difficult time. It is possible that David understands the NJ language, but his pronunciation is way off. That's something that is hard to convey in text alone. I don't know why I keep coming back to the idea that the engineer is angry just because David said the wrong thing. I guess it's both funny and petty. But I do have evidence to support this. Eric mentioned the book A Grammar of Modern Indo-European, and I had a look at it, and they quote Anil Biltu here, who featured in the film. Even with that simplification about Fassbender's pronunciation in his dialogue with the last engineer, he says, "David speaks rapidly, to the point where some sounds are swallowed." So, there we have it. The robot fucked up. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on TraviaanDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook. I'd like to thank my Patreon supporters, Mark Boder, Tariq, William Elkhart, Simon Haynes, and Gray Malkin. If you'd also like to become a Patreon supporter, head on over to patreon.com/TraviaanDesigns.